The more you learn about World War II, the more you realize that those Axis powers just had no idea what they were stepping in when they decided that the US would be a good country to declare war on. Case in point, Liberty ships. They were cracking a fresh bottle of champagne over the bow of a new Liberty ship, a brand new one, every 3 days throughout the war. That means all the ships that the Japanese and the Germans sank between them, total, during the entire war, didn't add up to more than about a year and a month's production for one Portland shipyard alone. Yes, the Portland shipyards cranked out the famous Liberty ship, the mainstay of 1,000 convoys across the ocean. Really rather large ships, really also rather ugly. I'm going to tell you the story about production of Liberty ships in Portland in just a minute. But first, let me introduce myself. My name is Finn J.D. John. I write a weekly newspaper column that goes out in about a dozen newspapers around the state right now. It's called Offbeat Oregon History. Right now, you're listening to a story from our archive, first published on May 2nd, 2009. I'm going to read it to you now. And if you'd like some more information about this little podcast or about the newspaper column that it's part of, stay tuned. Most Oregonians have some idea what Liberty ships are. Simple steam-powered freighters built with frantic speed and in staggering numbers by American shipyards during World War II, with the stated goal of building them faster than Hitler's boys could sink them. In this, they were wildly successful. American shipyards cranked out roughly 2,750 of these ugly little ships during the first 5 years of the 1940s, during which time the minions of Messrs. Hitler and Tojo only managed to sink about 200. One was actually built in just 4.5 days. And these weren't small ships. I called them little ships a minute ago, but that was relative to, maybe the Lusitania or the Queen Mary. These things were 441 feet long and 56 feet wide. They could lug 18 million pounds of jeeps, airplanes, soldiers, or anything else without being overloaded, which they frequently were. Their power plants were 2,500 horsepower steam engines, triple expansions usually, which pushed them to a pathetic but adequate 11 knots. Liberty ships were not exactly objects of beauty. President Franklin Roosevelt at the time referred to them as, quote, a dreadful-looking object, and most people thought he was right. They were considered expendable and not expected to last more than 5 years. But they were more than just cannon fodder. In fact, one of them drew first blood on the water during World War II when it sank a German raider in an old-fashioned gun battle in 1942. There was a war on, so many of the ships went to sea bristling with cannon barrels, some of them as big as 5 inches. There would have been a lot fewer of these ships, though, had it not been for the man who owned the Oregon Shipbuilding Company in Portland, a fellow named Henry Kaiser. Kaiser owned 7 shipyards around the country, including the Oregon one. What made the local yard special, though, was that it was specifically set up to produce Liberty ships, and it was set up in the most efficient way possible, like an assembly line. In just under 4 years, Portland cranked out 455 of them. In other words, a brand new freighter was getting a champagne bottle broken against its bow roughly every 3 days. It all ended, of course, when the war ended. The shipyards were shut down. The ships they produced soldiered on for years, but just 2 survive today, both museum ships, the John W. Brown and the Jeremiah O'Brien. To keep the shipyard workers housed, Kaiser bought 650 acres of farmland in the Columbia River floodplain, diked it off, and filled it with houses and apartment buildings. This place was first known as Kaiserville, then Vanport. Like the Liberty ships themselves, Vanport was not expected to survive World War II, but it did, for a few years, until a rotten railroad trestle washed out in a 1948 flood and let the river roar on in. That flood was the biggest since 1894, and you can still today see the high water mark on buildings in downtown Portland where the water was 2 feet deep. Most of them have been cleaned, though. You have to look really hard. Longtime residents of Springfield remember when salvaged buildings from Vanport were trucked down the valley and set up there shortly after the town washed away. That's the end of today's column. If you're listening for the first time, here's a little more information about this podcast and about Offbeat Oregon History, the newspaper column it's part of. Offbeat Oregon History tells the stories of Oregon history that nobody knows about, the ones everyone has forgotten. Stories of heroes and rascals, of shipwrecks and lost gold, of Shanghai'd sailors and Skid Road bordellos and pirates and robbers and buried treasure and unsolved mysteries. We've got all of those things. It's a weekly column, and I've been writing it since late 2008. So right now there are about 175 published episodes in the kitty. So every weekday morning I pull one of those episodes up and put it out on the daily RSS feeds. One in text and pictures for your newsreader, and one in audio only for your podcatcher or for iTunes. You can read any archive column and subscribe to either daily feed by going to the website at offbeatoregon.com. Both feeds are optimized for smartphone or iPhone use, but they work great on an iPad, tablet, netbook, computer, whatever you got. All the columns are covered under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Thanks for listening, and do drop me a line if you're ever in Corvallis and have time for a cup of coffee. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. Have a great day.